Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Tune into something different that makes a difference. At Parent Pump Radio, instead of a ripple, we choose to create a splash. Get energized, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. With your host and parent coach super guide, Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen.
Hi, this is Jacqueline T.D. Nguyen. We're here to pump up your parenting skill, pump up your knowledge, and pump up your energy. Welcome to Parent Pump Radio. Our show is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Go to parentpumpradio.com and leave your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows and subscribe to our podcast. So today we have a really great topic. When I was growing up, I came from an Asian family, and what I did not see from my parents was a lot of love and affection. Asian culture are very stoic people. They are great on discipline and teaching their children values and also principles. And growing up, I realized that I ended up kind of looking for love in all the wrong places because I didn't know what healthy love and healthy affection was like. And I had to learn that. So it is something that you can learn. And so our guest today is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's also a licensed professional clinical counselor, and she's certified as a drug and alcohol addiction counselor. She's located in Newport Beach and Laguna Niguel, California. She's also a guest author for DivorceMoms.com and is also a contributor to many national and international news publications. So ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you to Lisa Bahar. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you for having me.
I so appreciate you coming back on this topic. It's a topic that's dear to my heart.
It is. It's a very good topic, and I'm glad we're talking about it.
I know that you counsel a lot of divorced family. How does affection and love, what have you seen come up about that?
Well, if we look at divorced families, it falls right in line with what you're speaking of with regards to even cultural impacts, which I think is a relevant topic to pull into our discussion as well. With divorced family, the children are definitely affected and they have to adjust to the mother and the father or whatever parents are getting divorced on how to create security within themselves, as well as look to their parents. This is all age dependent, but the security of what they are accustomed to changes. And even though it might be a healthy idea to get divorced, it's a very challenging experience for the children either way. So I guess what I'm trying to say there is the first part is teaching children how to deal with divorce and learn how to develop skills to create healthy attachments, which come with love and affection.
Yeah.
Hopefully that made sense.
It does. I know when I was growing up, I can't remember a time when my parents were hugging and kissing each other. I mean, I know as kids we're probably like, ew, don't do that. But really there is a deep embedded thought that, hey, my parents are showing that affection. I can't remember that. And I know before I divorced my ex-husband, we never did that. So my kids didn't see that. And so I always wonder, what's the consequences and what can I do to create that change?
As a parent, right?
Yeah.
Especially going through it. If we're looking at divorcing, you're right. The children are consistently observing, no matter really what age, in my opinion, they're consistently observing and looking to parents and authority figures and adults and so on and so forth, but primarily parents or caregivers, whoever's serving that parental role on modeling and behavior. And so being mindful and being aware that you are on observation. I mean, you're kind of set up in an unfortunate or fortunate way to really demonstrate what it means to create love and affection that's healthy. Now that can come from communication. It can come from actual physical, as in hugging and holding and comforting the child. But it's really important to be mindful that what you're doing is being observed and understood by your children. They're really interpreting and noticing quite a bit.
Yeah, they do. I think this is why we get embarrassed when they say something that we said to each other, like Aunt Emily is fat or something, and they end up repeating that and you didn't even say it around them.
So true. And they do. They do repeat. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they get the look.
So I wanted to get into your new article. The article's title is 7 Ways to Teach Your Children How to Express Healthy Love and Affection. And when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, some of these things I've done, which is great, but then other ones I never even thought about. I'd like to kind of go through the 7 points, and if we have time, to discuss, you know, in details why you wrote this article and why it's so important for us to, as parents, to do this, whether you're a single parent or whether you are married.
Sounds good.
Obviously, that learning how to express healthy love and affection is essential for our, I think, for our self-esteem and self-respect, but also for our children, because like you said, they watch what we do. What's the first way to teach?
I'm a big advocate for self-care and making that a big part of the daily life. So self-care is essential, and it's not as obvious necessarily to parents, and children need to be taught on self-care. And what I mean by that is hygiene, being able to take care of their bodies, what they're eating, being able to go to sleep on time, having a real structured self-care plan is modeled by the parents or the caregiver. And the children learn from that and need that consistent structure of taking care of themselves. That's the first part, is self-love. And it starts there. It's just learning how to develop self-care skills.
Yeah, I think this is in everything. Like, it all starts with ourselves. I mean, even Gandhi said, if you want to change the world, you got to change yourself first. So you want to change your family,
right?
change yourselves. I think this is a big lesson for moms, because I know as a mom, I tend to do so much more for others before I do it for myself.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah, the children will watch you. And then, of course, they'll hold that against you. If you don't do it, then they're not going to do it. So they got to see you brushing your teeth, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what's number 2?
Well, number 2, I went into different kinds of relationships and including different kinds of ways of expressing love and affection. So I identified 3 different kinds of relationships, and these are all age appropriate and deserve to be explored further from these bullet points. But the first kind of relationship is the respectful or courteous type of relationship. So that's number 1, and we can talk about that. And then the next one is a loving or affectionate relationship. And then the 3rd one is the intimate or romantic relationship, which comes with maybe the adolescence, you know, and talking about that as well. And I think that's important, because early adolescence is very significant in how the youth respond to one another and learn how to create healthy relationships with boundaries. But the first one is a respectful and courteous relationship.
I love how you broke this down age appropriate, because like you said, each age is very different on how they need to learn about respect and relationships. I'd love to just break it down. So respectful or courteous relationship, what does that look like? How is it done?
Okay. So the first one is, like you said, the respectful and courteous relationship, which comes from just having an authority figure who's involved, being able to teach the child to learn how to say, yes, thank you, please, I'm sorry. Really the basics of learning how to create interpersonal, even at a young age, relationships, from the parent prompting them, helping them understand how to be respectful and courteous to another human being. And that may be an authority figure, but it also may be their sibling or playmate. So just the basics. Say please, say more please, that sort of thing.
How do you think empathy and sympathy fall into this age group? Or can we start teaching them empathy and sympathy?
I think yes. When children are together, for example, and let's take like maybe a brother who is 2 years old, if you want to go that young, and maybe a 9-month-old little sister, for example. Let's say the 9-month-old little sister falls down and bumps her head. Not very comfortable, but happens. the little 2-year-old might be able to actually comfort the little sister with parents demonstrating how that looks. And it's precious when you observe it. For example, I observe this all the time in family therapy, where a little sibling will comfort the other little sibling as he's sucking his thumb, he's comforting his little sister, and being able to express love and affection, and she's calm. She can be able to calm herself, self-calm herself, as her brother's there to demonstrate healthy love and affection. But the parent is actually saying something, be gentle, she's little. They're just helping the child learn how to be gentle, to comfort, and it doesn't necessarily need to have words. That would be, for example, a respectful and courteous relationship. It can also extend to the parent. For example, bite the parent out of play, for example, and the parent goes, ow, that hurt. The child can learn how to say, I'm sorry, and then they can learn how to have that awareness that their bite hurt the parent. But it's not, ow, smack, ow, stop that. They don't get that. That's not as effective as if they were learning how to be gentle. So it's more of a positive love and affection direction versus a hypercritical. That doesn't mean that you don't discipline your child and say, no, that's not appropriate, hands down, or whatever the language you need to use to make sure your point is clear. But it's learning how to be respectful of their behaviors and helping them understand that they have an effect on the world, they have an effect on other people in contact with them.
Okay, that makes sense. So the next type you said is the loving or affectionate relationship.
That's how I define expressing love and affection to individuals that might be in the child's life more often than not. Their parents or consistent relatives or people that the child is around, for that nanny or the babysitter or extended family might come over, and expressing love and affection to these types of individuals might come in more physical contact. So for example, grandpa's here, and then they can run and hug grandpa, learning how to have that kind of interaction with them, of loving and affectionate relationship with trusted family members and people who come into the child's life consistently. So they're learning how to be affectionate, express that, receive affection, and give affection to trusted authority figures, for example.
Okay. And how should parents model? Because you talk about this is modeled by the parents. What does that look like when the parents are modeling that?
Well, the child might be observing how the parents, for example, greet somebody who's coming in. Let's take a difficult relationship. More often than not, respectfully, sometimes the in-laws of one or both of the parents. But let's take an in-law situation where the parent doesn't necessarily have a great relationship with their mother-in-law. Look, it's the mother. The mother can express healthy love and affection to the mother-in-law, and the child feels more comfortable doing the same. It's what the child is observing. They'll absorb the tension. If the parent is aware of how they respond to other adults or other people in the environment, the child's going to watch that as a compass. They're going to look at that and see what the parent is modeling, and they will potentially do the same. But at least if they don't do the same, they're aware that that person, somebody that they can, for example, trust and be affectionate towards.
So this is why they always tell divorced moms and dads to not say anything bad about the other parent.
Absolutely, Jacqueline. It's so important, because that actually, the child will take that no matter what age and personalize it. They actually take it personally. It's important. You don't have to get along with everybody, but you're making the attempt to model healthy relationships so that the child can see how you're doing it. And you're not going to always get it right, but at least you're making the attempt. And that's what's healthy, is you're making the attempt to not make a situation worse, because the child gets anxious, they absorb it, and it comes out sideways in a variety of different ways if they see the tension between too many people consistently over time. Doesn't mean you don't have a bad day at Thanksgiving. It just means that particular Thanksgiving, oh my gosh, that was not a fun time. Overall, though, the parents are learning how to have healthy relationships, and the children are going to, if they don't do it, they're going to have it in their repertoire. They're going to remember it. It's going to have an effect.
Yeah, and it'll lead to the last kind of relationship that you talk about, is the intimacy and romantic relationship, the one that all of us parents are worried about when they get to.
Right? Yeah. Well, my gosh, let the games begin. Okay. this is becoming younger and younger. Children and adolescents they're getting more and more active sexually and otherwise. And if you come from a divorced home, for example, you might be seeking secure attachments or to feel included or to feel love. And this gets very confusing. So the adolescent finds themselves seeking out relationships more often than not that might feel like love, but then actually are not healthy love and affection. They are more exploitive in nature or, you know, even abusive in nature. And it's unfortunate, but it's not unusual for youth and adolescents to have pretty emotionally tenuous relationships. It's unfortunate, but it's true that the children are, you know, sexually active, or they might do certain things that they understood what healthy love and affection were that they wouldn't normally do at that age. This is a very, very touchy area of life, especially if there's not a lot of learning and communication and modeling and awareness of what is healthy love? What is healthy relationships? How do I treat my body? Going back to self-care, how do I set healthy boundaries with others? That's a very pivotal time.
Wow. Okay. So the other two is the foundation, obviously, to get into the intimacy and the romantic relationship. So you got to start with that foundation so that you can help your children navigate through their hormones when they get to the teenage years, right?
Right. And if you look at, for example, let's take a look at single parent homes, maybe the mother or maybe the father, for example, might be dating a lot or have a lot of activity sexually, and it's appropriate or not appropriate, whatever the case may be. The bottom line is there's might be multiple partners coming into the home. It's nothing against the parent, but it's that the child is observing this. This is what love looks like. And the parent needs to have their life too, that's understood. But the effects of that at times can be complicated because the parent is seeking some sort of connection and attachment as well. Or it could be in a married family as well, that love and affection, maybe like what you were talking about, isn't demonstrating because there's unresolved issues going on and there's more tension. So the child becomes anxious, lacks love and affection, and goes out and seeks it with other individuals in their life that might not be as healthy and appropriate for them. It doesn't mean all of the time, but it just means that there's a potential for that.
Yeah. And I just want to say there's never a time that's too late to learn. I mean, just because I didn't see that model when I was younger, I learned it. I learned it from great people, my mentors and coaches. For all those parents out there who feel like they didn't get started in time, or maybe they didn't get that in their childhood, it's not too late, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think parenting is probably the most, well, it is. In my humble opinion, I think if you're a parent, you are the top of the line, no matter what. I mean, that is the hardest and most challenging, most rewarding job, is to do and bring life into the world and do the best you can to acknowledge your strengths and learn how to deal with your weaknesses and teach a child to be there and be a parent. I mean, hats off to everybody who does that.
Yeah. It's like a chocolate fountain. It starts at the top. So however you want your children to be, you need to make that changes. If you didn't get it when you were younger, or you got too much of something and you need to swing the pendulum back to the middle, start doing it. Start learning about how to do it from listening to our show, or somebody can call you, because it's never too late.
Absolutely.
To make that change for your children.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. And it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the third thing on how to teach your children how to express healthy love and affection, which is appropriate language. So how does that play in there?
Well, the profanity and the expressive words, yes, they can enhance a statement and make it more clear. If it's just even in play, it can actually, that this is a very important part of language and learning how to express healthy love and affection, that using language is a big part of feeling love and compassion. Language is intended to be loving and affectionate. And yeah, sometimes that I blanking love you is a beautiful thing. And when you hear it, it might feel really good. On the other hand, vulgar language, in my opinion, is not as effective as just cleaning up the language and learning how to express without profanity. And that's important.
Yeah, because our children are going to pick it up. I mean, my kids are 9 and 12, and they knew about bad words before that from school.
Right, so it's important. So teaching appropriate language.
I think it is really important, and especially if you're going to be arguing. Yeah. Please don't use bad language when you're arguing.
I remember one parent came to me and she said, "My son is calling me woman." He says, "Listen, woman."
That's very funny.
I don't know where he picked that. He goes, "But school." You know, so they bring home the language. And in that case, for example, let me just kind of stretch on that example. When son was calling his mother woman, "Listen, woman," the ideal there would be for the father, if there's a father figure in there or a parental figure there, is to acknowledge what he's saying by saying that's not an appropriate word to call your mother. Now, that's very important modeling right there. And then now let's try to work this through. Let's actually call her mom. She's your mother and she's trying to talk to you right now. If the child hears something to that effect, he might not like it, but he will be disciplined by a role model who's telling him that we don't treat your mom that way, i.e. we don't treat women in your life that way. And there's now the foundation of respect, planting that seed.
Yeah. You hear kids calling their mom by their first name because they hear everybody else calling the mom by their first name.
Kind of funny. Like, who are you?
So we talk about basically communication, how to communicate, but then there's another part of that, which is listening, which is great that I love you put that in there. I think listening is more important than talking.
Absolutely. If you listen, you'll be called a great conversationalist. So if you can learn how to listen, that's a key. I play a game in a group that I run on how to be an attentive listener. And we play that game telephone. That's a great game. You can play telephone and you'll just watch how people can make up this whole, it can start with one statement and end on the other side of the room with something entirely different. So really attentively listening, and the point of that is to attentively listen to what somebody is telling you. And if you're not interested, at least act interested. I know that sounds like, well, am I supposed to fake it? Well, yes, practice. Because the likelihood if you practice listening, you'll start to become interested. So it's important to learn how to listen. And that's a very big key to interpersonal interactions at any age, is learning how to listen, being interested in other people and what they have to say. And that also means to be heard as well. So if they feel heard, the likelihood of them learning how to help another person feel heard, they meaning the children, is good.
Yeah. You know, one thing I learned, and I also teach in my communication class, is teaching people how to acknowledge and validate. Just because you acknowledge and you validate how they feel does not mean you have to agree with it. And I think a lot of times we think that because we validate, oh, you know, like you're right, it somehow means that we agree with it. But I think sometimes when people are upset, they just want some acknowledgement and some validation that if they're, yes, you are upset and it makes sense that you are upset, it actually calms them down.
Right.
Because they're heard, because they really just want to be heard.
That's exactly right.
And I think that's a part of what I call intuitive listening, where you're really listening between the line and what's underneath, that they're not wanting for you to tell them they're right. They just want you to hear that they're feeling the way they do. And I think especially in children, sometimes they just don't make sense why they're so upset or the level of upsetness they are upset about. Because for us, I think as an adult, we think, well, shouldn't you be more upset about that? But why are you more upset about this? And we try to devalidate, like, oh, that's no big deal. You know, wait till you get older. You can have much bigger problem. Well, that doesn't make what they feel any less.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of adults and parents tend to diminish. And I think it's our way of helping because we want them to feel like, oh, it's not such a big deal.
Right.
And so we think we're helping by saying it's not such a big deal. But I think that actually puts more gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a big skill, validation and acknowledging another point of view. And that doesn't mean you have to agree with it. I think that's the big key that I'm getting from what you're saying. You don't have to agree. An individual just wants to feel heard. And that's lifetime work. If you can start with your kids, boy, that's really big to learn how to do that. It's actually, I think, the magic of relationships. If you can hear another point of view without judgment and not necessarily agree with it, but just hear it and not judge it, That's an art.
Yeah. And then you talk about seeking comfort, teaching your kids to seek comfort from you. Tell us more about that.
Children, no matter what age, even adults, but children need a person or persons where they can feel they can go to that will be there for them. For example, if you're a working parent and you can't always be there, it's not reasonable that they have a trusted list or group of people that they know that they can go to. And that might mean a trusted nanny, that might mean a trusted teacher or another trusted parent or grandparent or whatever the case may be. But learning how to seek comfort, yes, from within themselves, but also to have the ability to create love and affection and learn how to receive compassion from another person is important. And sometimes people don't know how to do that, and because they haven't been taught in the early years that it's okay. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to let someone help you or feel safe in seeking comfort from someone else who can be there. So that's essential, is learning how to seek comfort. Also learning how to comfort yourself is important too.
Yeah, I think this is easier probably for women than men, because I feel like men feel like if they go out and seek help for comfort or something, like somehow they're less than or they're weak, and that they need to be a man and not cry and find ways to do it yourself. And I know as a girl, this was something that was easy for me to learn. You just expect women to reach out to each other.
Yeah, I see some shifts too as well with men and learning how to express themselves and working with men and having them come into work on healthy relationships. I noticed that there's actually a shift occurring where they seem to be more willing to open themselves up to expressing themselves about how they're feeling, putting word to how they're feeling. But again, I'm in the therapy environment, so I can't generalize that that's how it looks like out in the world if you're not in the therapy room. But I do notice when people do seek out therapy, men, for example, that they're learning and they're open to learning how to express themselves to be more healthy and mindful in their relationships. And they're pretty good at it. Once they get in touch with it, they're pretty good at it. Like, I get it. I can put words to it. This is good. I can understand it.
They are. We all have that feminine and masculine side. And I think when the men do get in touch with that feminine side, that loving side, that giving side, I think it creates much more balance within themselves, not to have to be so macho and taking. That for the ones that have come in and gone to your office and learn, I commend them, because there are a lot of men out there who still live in the world that they don't need help and that they can do it themselves. The other part is about teaching and maintaining rules and boundaries. And this is one thing my parents taught me very well when it came to values and principle. They maintain rules and boundaries. My dad was a military man, and so that was something that was very common when I was growing up. But what are you talking about when you talk about teaching and maintaining rules and boundaries?
This is a very important survival skill, and it sets up children for success if they have rules and boundaries in the home. And it's important for healthy love, healthy relationship. It's important for work relationship. It's important for community relationship, is to have structured rules and adhere to them. I think right now, we're hearing a lot from Generation Xers having big issues with the millennials, if you will, if we want to put some labels on some certain populations mm-hmm. of individuals, and the difficulties that maybe the older generations are dealing with in regards to noticing that the youth that are coming in to their early adulthood and beyond were not brought up to the level of these rules and these boundaries. It was more of anything goes, enable the child, befriend with the child, shop with the child, I'm your best friend, I'm your confidant. There was a lot of diffusion there. And I think the effects now are that and these are actually coming from young adults talking to me about this, is that we can't blame the children that are coming into the world of adulthood from 18 and up, for example, saying, I can't believe you're so entitled and you don't have any life skills to take care of yourself. What's wrong with you? Well, it's actually not fair to put that on them when they weren't brought up to earn allowance or learn how to adhere to a rule or have boundaries. This is so essential for life skills. And it's sad because we're seeing the effects of some generations now that have not had those instilled. And it's a sad thing. because they're disrespectful and they don't know it, and we blame them for it. It's not their fault. It's up to the parental.
Starts at the, yeah. Right, as they say, it starts at the top of the fountain.
Yep, that's right. So I'm a big advocate for rules and boundaries, to teach their children to be set up for success is ultimately. And success means healthy, happy, content. It doesn't mean financial gain and all that jazz. It does. It can be.
Absolutely. But, you know. In the last part, you talk about teaching children awareness of other people's custom and diversity. And I think it goes very well for what's going on in our country right now. Seems like we're so divided, not just as a country, but culturally and ethnically, too. I really love that you put this in, especially in the age we're growing up now.
Yes, and I think that deserves a whole show in itself. Is this is a topic that is ever-changing, and it's new, and it's a delicate topic, and not a lot of people are talking about it to the degree that I would hope right now, because children are learning how to navigate these, and there's a lot of assumptions of what's right or wrong, or how could you say that, where the child's like being scolded, for example, for saying something that might be just intuitive on their part, for example, but they don't have the awareness, like, what am I supposed to understand here? So this is a very delicate topic that I don't know if there's a lot of discussion going on out there, but I think it deserves some time. You know, how do we navigate culturally? How do we put that into words? I don't even really know if adults know it all. People are still questioning what's politically correct, what's not politically correct. So it's a really delicate topic, but we do need to talk about it because the children are coming in and they're looking to people who are confused about it themselves. It's important to have the awareness that you might not know how to do it, but just know you got to be aware that it's relevant. And I don't know if we even made it real clear on what diversity means, whether it's transgender or three bathrooms or all the things that go on with diversity and interracial relationships and so on and so forth. With no judgment, but just seeking understanding and how to best be appropriate and learn healthy boundaries and communicate effectively. How do we do that as parents?
I agree. Well, we're out of time, Lisa.
Oh.
If you can believe that.
Oh, wow.
All of Lisa's information is on the show notes, and also the article that she wrote in Divorced Mom that we're talking about, 7 Ways to Teach Your Children How to Express Healthy Love and Affections. And contact her for any questions, comments, or go in and see her. She's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for being on the show. As always, you are so informative, and I love it.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. Thank you to the listeners, too, and I look forward to hopefully coming on again.
Okay. Until next time, always be learning and always be growing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows. To be instantly notified of new episodes, subscribe to our RSS feed. The RSS feed button is located at the top of the page where all our shows are featured. And after listening to the show, go to parentpumpradio.com or our Facebook page to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions. And while you're at our website, sign up to receive a free gift. Until next time, have a wonderful week.